Hello, this is Tom Campbell, host of a series of interviews with local band members and music industry professionals from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. Today's interview is with the High Spirits. Hello, this is Tom Campbell. Today is August 29th, 2015, and I'm talking with the following members of the High Spirits: Owen Husney, Lauren Siegel, Rick Levinson, Doug Ahrens, Jay Ludio, and Rick Beresford. As typical, we always ask the first question. Please state your full name, your date of birth, and hometown, please.
Owen Robert Husney, 9847. Hometown, where was I? Minneapolis, Minnesota. My parole was in August of 92.
Lauren Clifford Siegel, formerly known as Little Cliffy Stone.
Date of birth?
July 17th, 1946. I am the first year of the baby boomers.
And your hometown?
Minneapolis.
Rick Levinson, a.k.a. the Ayatollah of Rock and Rolla. St. Louis Park, Minnesota. Born April 30, 1948.
Hometown?
St. Louis Park.
Doug.
Doug Ahrens, November 27th, 1947. Hometown is New Ulm, Minnesota.
John Paul Ludio, I go by Jay. I was born February 11th, 1947 in Minneapolis.
I'm Rick Beresford. I was born October 29th, 1948. Hometown is Minneapolis.
All right, let's go around again real quick and let's state your date of graduation and your high school.
St. Louis Park High School, 1965.
St. Louis Park High School, 1964.
St. Louis Park High School, 1966.
Southwest High School, 1965.
Washburn High School, class of 65.
Edina Morningside High School, class of 66.
Okay, so I want to get a little bit of background before the High Spirits. So we'll start in about 1963, and let's start with Doug, Mike in the Shadows. Doug, what's the story?
Well, I started the first organized group was Mike in the Shadows with Mike Judge, who later became a member of the Chancellors, and Bob Folschow from the Castaways, who sang the high parts in the song Liar Liar that you'll remember, and myself, and went on from there.
Where did the band play?
The band played at typical sort of things for that age group. I think we were, what, 10th grade, 11th grade, and we played at high schools and VFWs and any place that would hold a teen dance.
And Jay, tell us about your first band in that time period.
Well, my first band was called the Vikings, but we had to change the name when the football team came to town to the Raiders. the band members included myself, Doug Froggy Nelson, who later played with Gregory D and the Avantes, and Mickey Belzer, a famous doctor in Minneapolis. We played high school dances, private parties. We played at a local pizza joint called the Dragon's Den and the Judge Wright Talent Show.
Where was the Dragon's Den located? Do you
recall? It was on 54th and Nicollet.
And Rick Beresford, how about you?
The first band I played in was, I was living up in Alexandria, and I played with a group called the Silvertones from 61 till 63. Then I moved to Minneapolis, and I can't remember the connection, if it was Dick Roby or Tom DiBiase, but somehow I got hooked up with Randy Resnick and Bob Cohen, and played in a group called the Treblemen. Mike Mock was our drummer.
Really?
And Dennis Libby was our lead singer. And we played at high school dances. We played at Robbinsdale Youth Center. We played at a teen club down on Broadway and Penn. I can't remember what it was called. And then that group swapped out. Mike Mock and Denny Libby left the group, and a guy named Jim Madison came and played on drums.
Okay, Owen and Lauren, I would like to hear about your time in the summer of 63 working as trainee camp counselors.
I got to start this one. The one first thing I remember is meeting Lauren at that time, and we were getting ready to go on the bus for camp. And Lauren, I overheard Lauren tell a friend, if that nerd Husney is in my cabin, I'm calling my mother to come get me. Because I was like, I was nerd boy in school. But I waved that flag high, by the way. And I overheard it, and I thought, oh, shit, now I got to figure out a way to go home now, because they all know about me here at camp, too. How did that transfer happen? So,
was your pants.
We did wind up in the same cabin. We somehow figured out that we both had a love for music. And we had a Fabergé fight. We got into a fight with some powder in the cabin, and we're throwing it all over and everything. And actually, that's where our true friendship began, was at camp. And then when these traveling guitar players came through camp and played, you know, I just remember looking at these guys playing. And they were their faces were contorted. They were into it, and they were being paid like $20 to go around to summer camps and play "Michael, Row Your Boat Ashore." And I remember the way they looked. And then I turned around, I looked and back, and all the little girls were looking at these guys. And I thought, okay, well, this could be my path out of nerddom. And it was really interesting because I left camp. I don't know if you remember this, Lauren, but I left camp early. I left camp about a week early, went home, sold my clarinet, bought a guitar. But I have to tell you that, like Rick was saying, my first impetus was Randy Resnick, who I consider one of the best guitar players in the world. He's yes. truly, truly one of the best. But I remember going back and talking about it with Randy, and I remember the moment Randy figured out blues chords. We were sitting in his bedroom, and he was a ham radio operator. And all of a sudden, we were listening to some record, and he goes, "I get it." And I remember that just it goes from A, you know, E to A to E, you know, B to A, down back down to E. That progression, and that spark lit up in me, and I understood it. I started out to be a jazz guitar player. But no one ever got laid playing an augmented ninth diminished chord. You only got laid playing E and A and B. So I made the transition out of that. But that's where really Lauren and I met. And after camp, I remember Lauren said that she was a drummer, that we should get a band together. So I went over to her house, which was on Louisiana. And I remember walking in the door, first time after camp, and I remember walking in the door, and you had a clothes horse, like where you hang your pajamas on, and you were singing into it, like, you know, like a lead singer. And you're like, and I watched you for about 5 minutes. It was either go in the house and have a band or call the police. It was either one. And that was the first thing. And then Lauren started out, I think, as a drummer. But I also, just, and I'll be done, I was in a band with Mike, I don't want to even say his last name. But he was rather large, I would say, in that 350 range or whatever.
Morbidly obese.
Using yes. my drum set.
Using your drum set. And guys. I got kicked out of that band. I was with, I think it was Larry Burley and Big Mike.
Is this the Rivieras?
Yes. I think it probably was pretty close to the Rivieras. And the way I got kicked out is they said there's going to be two bands formed. It'll be Owen. The good news is you're going along with the 400-pound guy, and you're going to form a band. And I'm like, no, I don't think I'm going to do that. And then I came back, and we re-met up again. Lauren and I did.
Okay, so Lauren, when you saw the strolling guitar players, that did not have the same effect on you?
No. No, I always sang my whole life. When I was a little kid, I remember when I went to my cousin's bar mitzvah in Los Angeles. They said, "Cliffy, get up there and sing 16 tons," and things like that. So I always sang, and as a matter of fact, in the house we had a pull light, you know, with a string, and I tied a baseball around it, and used that for a microphone. I used to do that. I wasn't in a band like any of these other guys. I just always liked to sing, and then I decided I was going to be a drummer, and I bought a drum set, but I didn't know how to drum.
Where'd you buy the drum set from?
It was a Slingerland. That, yeah, kind of funny.
Flesh pink.
Yeah,
the fresh ugliest pink. Drum set you've ever seen.
And it was
seen.
At that drum store downtown by Schmidt. Yeah,
Dahlgren's drum
set. And I bought the drum set. And actually, Owen is right, but not totally right. We were playing together. And then one day I decided to drop in on Owen's house, and someone was downstairs playing my drum set.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
Pissed me off.
Yeah, you were out at that point.
So I decided, you know, I was taking a couple of drum lessons from a guy named Mike Pendergast. And then I decided, you know what, I'm just going to sing. And then he probably remembers things clearer than me because of all the stuff in my system for years. But
I prescribed drugs. I didn't take
them. Yeah. So then we just, yeah, we I guess Rick kind of has a better handle on how the three of us really got going, aside from the fact that Owen and I decided we wanted to be together. And actually, Owen says how we met, he had me won over in after 20 minutes of talking to him. He had me laughing. And he's had me laughing ever since 1963.
Because of his charming personality.
No, he was laughing at me.
Continuously so.
So, yeah. Rick Levinson, I understand from talking with you earlier that at some point in 1964, you attended a Beach Boys concert and it had a big impact on you.
Yeah, it was either 63 or end of 63 or 64. And they were up on stage and Carl Wilson was playing this white Fender Jaguar with a tortoiseshell pickguard.
I was at that concert.
And it was the most beautiful guitar I had ever seen. And I was convinced, I knew in my heart that if I had that guitar, I could get a girl to kiss me and probably get laid. I knew this beyond a doubt. And I went to Herzl camp, and there was a guy up there, Rico, who had a guitar. And he'd play his guitar, and all the girls would swarm around him. And I thought it's because he played the guitar. The fact that he was one of the best-looking guys in the history of the world means nothing.
But are you talking about Enrico Rosenbaum?
Yeah,
yeah,
right.
And so I figured if I could play the guitar, let alone a white Fender Jaguar with a tortoiseshell pickguard, I could be him. And so that was my impetus for doing it. And there's a little revisionistic history, probably right. Because of...
Well, you got halfway there.
Yeah, that's right. Cliff, Lauren now... called me out of the blue and said, I just got a set of drums. This was the Slingerland flesh pink, ugly drum set. And I'm learning how to play drums and I want to start a rock and roll band. And I heard you played guitar. Because I had played guitar with two guys who were singers, Johnny Guerin and Greg Gettner, in a talent show for St. Louis Park. Actually, it was Central Junior High School. And that's, he said, I heard you played guitar. Do you want to start a band? And I didn't have my driver's license. I wasn't going to get it for like another 4 weeks. So he sent Howard Gray over to pick me up with my guitar and my amplifier. And I came over to Cliff's house on Louisiana. And just the two of us played. And we were really bad, but we really had great fun. Great fun. And so the next day, or that Monday in school, I was talking to David Rifkin in my history class. And I said, you know, I started playing guitar again, and you know, Cliff's playing the drums. Do you know any other guitar players? And David gave me your name.
Really?
Yes.
So was that so I had already been kicked out of Owen's basement?
No, you hadn't done Owen's basement yet. That was the first time. Then I came back.
You were just planning to kick you out.
Yeah. I came back to Lauren, aka Cliff, and I said, I talked to David Rifkin, and he said, Owen Husney is a good guitar player, lead guitar player. Really? So I called Owen, and we went to your house, to your basement. And the first thing I remember is you opening your guitar case and this metallic sky blue Fender Jazzmaster
guitar.
See
what drugs will do if you don't do them.
That, and I said, that is really a cool guitar. Now, if I had a white guitar to stand next to that, we'd be so cool that we'll both get laid. And so
we slept with each other.
So we started jamming, and right away it was obvious that Lauren was meant to be a singer but not meant to be a drummer.
Right.
And that was the transition, because we wanted to be together, but we couldn't be together with Lauren as the drummer.
Did you realize that as well, Lauren?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well.
And your desire was to be a singer.
I don't know. Well, I always was going to sing, whether I played drums or not.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the drums is...
I thought, well, at the time, you know, we were the first band to have just a lead singer out in front. I don't know.
Right. As far as I know.
So everybody had to play an instrument. That's the way I thought about it. If you're going to be in a band, you got to play something. So...
But Lauren had attitude.
But yeah, and then the Rolling Stones came along, and that changed everything.
So let's jump back to Mike and Shadows, who come to an end. And Doug, what happens to you with the end of Mike and the Shadows?
Well, after Mike and the Shadows broke up and turned into the Chancellors and the Castaways and so on, I jobbed around a little bit with Jay Ludio and myself and other musicians. And we did pick up bands, jobs around the Twin Cities, typical, again, teen jobs as far as dances at VFW clubs and armories and fraternity and sorority houses and that sort of thing. And we'd throw together a band of the moment and play the gigs, make a few bucks, and move on. And we did that a year and a half, something like that. Yeah. And then from that point on, I was... picked up on a referral to come and talk to these guys.
Okay, let's go jump to Rick Levinson. And you, I believe, talked to Mr. David Rifkin once again.
Back to history class. David sat the row next to me, one seat behind. So we didn't get much history, but we sure got a lot of music. And I said, David, do you know a drummer? And he says, there's a guy named Doug Ahrens who just got out of another band, and he's really good. And he had your phone number, too. And so from there, I called Doug, and Doug came over to my house where we were going to practice in the basement with Owen, Lauren, and I. What I didn't know is that Doug had Jay in his back pocket, and Doug was interviewing us as much as we were interviewing him.
So how did the first session go with Doug?
Instant. Fit right in.
So you hired him right away?
On the spot.
I have no memory of that. Unbelievable.
I don't have a memory of
when we came out of the practice.
It's always a fun time with the high spirits.
This is kind of like the Nixon tapes, only in his head.
We finished the practice at my parents' house on West 25th Street, and the biggest pain in the ass of all practices is the drum equipment. There's 6,000 things to carry out, so we're carrying this stuff out. And we get it out into the front lawn area, but not in the car yet. And Doug says, I got a keyboard player. I said, really? He says, I got a killer keyboard player. He said, we'll bring him along for the next practice. And what we didn't know is that he was really checking us out first, because he didn't want to drop Jay out of the blue in advance because of Jay's talent.
Okay, so Jay, you show up for a session then pretty quick?
It was his house. He didn't have an organ. We had to use his piano.
Carry the piano.
We're talking about a...
Remember that it was...
700-pound upright.
It was a dining room in his house.
We did a little Latin blues.
And we did Good Golly Miss Molly and all the Little Richard songs.
Yeah.
We dumped a couple mics inside the acoustical enclosure. And
yeah, I played the
was
piano.
Was I
for
there?
The first,
yeah.
Wow.
Huh?
Yeah, you were there. What
did I look like?
You were 20 pounds heavier.
It was probably. Either you or a hologram, but we think it was you.
So, Jay.
No memory of that.
So, Jay, what do you recall about your first practice session with the High Spirits?
I don't recall a whole bunch of it. I do remember that I played piano for a while. I didn't get an organ until sometime later. I'm not sure how much longer. But
we got a job and we forced you to buy one.
A Farfisa?
Was that it? Yeah, the Farfisa. Got it in B sharp, of course. You know.
And greatest organ of all time.
Yeah, it was at my house. Greatest it's keyboard. Kind of strange having an audition at my own house.
So you're playing on an upright piano.
I'm playing on an upright piano, yeah. And we mic'd it. And Rick, you had, didn't you? You must have had a piano at your house, because I remember playing piano at your house, too.
We did have a piano at my house.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember rehearsing at your house in your living room.
I remember
that's where the piano was in the living room.
When Jay and I were jobbing around, the condition was: do you have a piano? Yeah.
One thing I do remember, this is kind of off the point here, but when we were having that that session, my uncle Phil, who was a missionary in Japan and happened to be back in Minneapolis, unexpectedly stopped in at the house.
Oh no!
And how did that go?
Well, it went fine. We talked a little bit and stuff, and then you know he went on. My mother never wasn't there, and, you know. No, no. In fact, I saw them real recently. I was just at their 60th wedding anniversary. Mm-hmm.